should have been out of bed a damn hour ago. Come on, we got problems.
What is it?
Sarge pointed off to the north. That big-ass fire, or haven't you noticed?
Yeah, let me get dressed and I'll be out.
Sarge tipped his hat and smiled.
Morning, Mel.
Hi, you startled us.
I'm sorry about that. Certainly didn't mean to.
We've just got to do something quick about this fire.
Mel looked out the door.
How close is it?
Then she saw the smoke billowing over the tree line across the street.
Oh no!
She practically shouted.
I hadn't noticed the smoke when I first came to the door, but now I didn't understand how I could have missed it.
Oh shit, I muttered.
Yeah, oh shit, Sarge replied. Get a wiggle on it, Morg.
I got my boots on as fast as I could and told Mel to get the girls up and bring them over to Danny's. The old man's stride this morning showed purpose. At Danny's, all the other guys were there, an impressive group gathered on the porch.
I finally got his ass out of bed, Sarge barked as we approached.
About time, princess, Thad said with a smile.
What the hell is this? Some kind of union meeting? I asked.
Yeah, we're organizing for better food and conditions, Mike quipped.
I laughed.
Good luck with that shit.
All right, let's get down to business, Sarge said.
Pointing with his stick, he continued.
That damn fire is just up the road, and we need to get our shit together before it gets here.
Where is it? I asked.
It's burning up to 445 now, Danny said.
Damn, it moved fast.
Yes, it did. Now we have to figure out what we're going to do about it, Sarge said.
We cut some breaks in that field over there, Thad said, nodding his head in the direction of the pasture.
We've got those tanks on that trailer, but that's only good for spot fires. We have to hope that the field that wraps around here holds the fire off, Danny said.
There's no way we can cut a fire line out there in the woods. We just don't have the equipment, I said.
Sarge looked at Tyler.
Your place is over there across the street, isn't it?
Tyler pointed toward his house.
Yeah, right over there.
I think we should move you guys out of there, over to this side of the street. That dirt road will be our last line of defense.
There isn't that much fuel here, so we may be able to hold it out there in that pasture, Sarge said.
I think we should go take a look at it, Thad said.
Sarge nodded.
I agree. Let's do that.
Sarge, Danny, Thad, and I hopped into Sarge's Hummer. The old man must have wanted to be a NASCAR driver at some point, because he only knew two speeds, stopped and wide open.
We were soon turning onto Highway 445, where we came face to face with the fire. As we rolled down the road, we could feel the heat, like standing near a blast furnace.
The sight of the destruction was shocking. Half of Shockley Heights had burned, and everything in the north side of the road was on fire. We saw some people running around in the hail of ash and cinders falling from the sky.
I think we've seen enough, Sarge said. This thing is going to jump the highway for sure.
Sarge wheeled the truck around, and we returned the way we came, noting a couple of small spot fires already burning on the south side. Back out on 19, I directed Sarge to pull into the campground on Lake Door. We drove through the camp to the boat ramp.
See how things narrow down in here?
We've got the road on one side and the lake on the other. I pointed back to the north. There's a big bay head over there. The fire will have a hard time burning through that.
You think this could push it around us? Thad asked.
It's already burning on that side of the road, Danny said, nodding to the west side of the highway.
Once it's past the camp, it'll have to cross a wide power line easement, not to mention a lot of brush over there has been cut.
There isn't much in the way of fuel, I said.
So you don't think it will burn all the way down here? Sarge asked.
I think it's a good possibility.
Plus, there's another easement south of us, on this side of the road, that will act as another break.
Let's go check that out, Sarge said.
Let me drive, I said.
I headed back in the direction of the house, turning off the road at a small clearing.
This is a gas easement.
It runs at an angle behind our place and makes a wedge between here and the road. I think the fire could burn down into here and stop.
Is this the easement you were talking about, Morgan? Sarge asked.
Yeah, this is it. It's wide enough to make a difference, I replied.
As we bounced down the dirt track, Sarge asked,
Where's your place from here?
Danny pointed back over his shoulder.
Over there about a mile. This may give us what we need to keep it away.
A mile ain't much.
Sarge rubbed his chin.
But I think you're right.
We should bring that water trailer and make our stand here. This wide track should really help keep it back, and we can knock down anything that pops up, Sarge said.
We all agreed and headed back for the house. The smoke was so bad outside now that the kids were inside.
All right, we've figured out where we're going to try and stop this fire, or at least turn it away from us, Sarge said.
Where? Jeff asked.
There's a gas line easement just up the road here.
It's a wide sandy patch, perfect place, I said.
What do we need to do? Bobby asked.
We need to leave some folks here, and everyone else needs to go. All hands on deck, Sarge said.
Once everyone was gathered, we went into the plan, explaining we were going to try and stop the fire at the gas easement. I laid out one of the maps and showed them where I was talking about, running a finger along the dashed line. Mel asked where it was in relation to our house, and I dragged my finger along the map a short distance.
Here.
How far is that? Mel asked.
A mile or so, Danny replied.
That's so close, Brandy said.
We went on to explain what we were going to do and how everyone needed to be ready to leave in case of an emergency. This particular point caused a lot of concern.
Sarge took a moment to calmly explain the reason for it, the absolute importance of it. It was decided that Danny, Thad, Jeff, Jess, and I would go with Sarge and Mike to try and hold the fire, and everyone else would stay behind to keep security and be ready to leave should it come to it. Once everyone was clear on what was about to take place, we started getting things ready. In short order, everyone was assembled. We'd have my truck, the small red one with the water trailer, Sarge's Hummer, and two ATVs with us. Danny led the way, with everyone following him off the road onto the easement. Thad drove the small red truck down the dirt road a ways so it could quickly move either direction. While he and Danny were priming the Striker pump, I handed out the gear we had. Shovels, axes, Pulaskis, and beaters. The smoke was so thick in the woods that visibility was cut to only a few yards. The hot white cloud seemed to cling to the ground, rolling outward. All we could really do was wait.
Notice how the smoke is so close to the ground? Thad asked.
Sarge looked up into the gray soup hanging over our heads.
Yep, must be high pressure. Maybe a storm's coming.
Somehow, I don't think we're that lucky, I said.
Hell, if it started raining right now, anything short of the storm old Noah witnessed would be like pissing into a volcano, Sarge replied.
I've done that before, Mike said quickly.
Done what? Jess asked.
Pissed in a volcano. I did that once, Mike replied.
Just as I was about to make a smart-ass comment back to Mike, a crashing sound came from the woods, followed by a large cloud of ash and embers that soared into the air. The temperature suddenly started to rise as well, heralding the approaching flames.
Let's spread out along the road.
Call out if you see any fire start on the south side of this line, Sarge shouted.
Everyone started moving rapidly. Jeff rode back down toward the end of the road on the ATV. He had one of the beaters with him, its base resting on the footrest and its flapper end sticking up in the air. The black flapper waved back and forth as he sped away. He looked like some sort of surreal standard bearer rushing into battle. Morgan, what is that? Jess asked, pointing to a couple sections of pipe coming out of the ground.
That's part of a gas line that runs through here.
She walked a couple of steps, then asked,
You mean like natural gas?
Yeah.
Should we be here then? I mean, is it going to blow up? She asked, fear in her eyes.
I laughed to myself. The possibility of a gas line had never occurred to me, but there wasn't time to worry about it now.
I don't think so. I doubt there's any gas in it.
That should have run out a long time ago, I replied.
You don't think so?
Best I can offer you. It should be out of gas by now. Besides, the fire isn't going to burn across here. That's why we're here, I said. I didn't bother telling them that the empty line was far more dangerous than a full one. As the inferno approached, things changed. The wind picked up, being drawn toward the flames. Then, there was the sound, a hellish, constant roar.
Let's move back toward the trees here, I yelled,
pointing to the opposite side of the easement. As we moved, I looked down the clearing. I could see Danny and Thad to the east with the truck and trailer. To the west, the Hummer with Sarge and Mike. It looked like the set of some really bad spaghetti western with everyone in bandanas and all the smoke. Once we could hear the blaze, it wasn't long before we could start to see the flicker of orange back in the trees on the other side of the easement.
Let's go! That's what we're here to stop! I shouted as I ran toward the small fire.
Everyone followed, and using the beaters and shovels, we quickly put the small spot fire out.
Keep your eyes open. That's exactly what we're looking for.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the truck suddenly move toward the far side of the cleared strip. Then I saw the smoke in the direction they were headed, so I started to jog toward them. I could see Danny on the trailer holding on to the water tank as they bounced along. The truck pulled parallel to the tree line. Danny jumped off before the truck stopped. He pulled the pump off, setting it on the ground, and quickly started it. By then, Thad was dragging a hose out into the woods. When I got to them, they had two hoses going on a small but aggressive fire in a thick stand of pine trees. Using my shovel, I raked the debris back around the edge of the fire, containing that side. With two hoses going, it didn't take long to knock the fire down to a soggy, smoking mess. It struck me that this all happened without a word being spoken. We were dragging the hoses back out when Jeff roared up on the ATV.
Fire down here!
He shouted, pointing east. We quickly piled the hose and pump on the trailer. Thad ran back to the truck while Danny and I clung to the tanks. When we jumped off, it was clear that this fire was much bigger than the one we'd just dealt with. Danny was setting the pump down when I grabbed a hose and took off running into the woods. That is, until the hose stopped. The nozzle jerked from my hands. Turning around, I could see Danny trying to untangle the line. He started waving at me, and I picked the nozzle back up and continued on. Getting close enough to the flames to be able to hit it with water, I felt the pressure rushing through the hose and opened it up. A blast of air was followed immediately by the gush of water. It wasn't long before Thad added another hose to the fight. Danny and Jeff were working the edge of the fire with shovel and beater, slowing the spread. For the next few hours, we repeated the process again and again. Some of the spot fires were close to the clearing. Some were farther out into the woods, requiring Thad to drive the truck out into the bush to get the hoses close enough to bring them to bear.
We need to refill these tanks. They're nearly empty, Danny said, panic edging into his voice. Shit, shit, shit!
Let's run over to the lake, I said. Jeff pulled up in the ATV, his face black with soot.
Done? I've been out there in the woods putting out the little fires while you assholes played in the water.
How's it look down there right now? I asked.
Jeff looked back down the sandy swath.
It seems to be slowing down now.
Follow us over to the lake, then.
Hell yeah, I could use a dip, he said.
The public boat ramp was only a couple hundred yards down the road, and we were there in no time. Thad backed the trailer down the ramp to get the pump close to the water. To fill the tanks, we had to disconnect the pump from the tanks, connect the suction hose, and drop it in the lake. This is where the priming pump came in handy. Being able to use the small hand pump connected to it to quickly prime the pump. As we were getting the pump set up, there was a stampede of bodies down the ramp and into the water. Jeff ran down the ramp, yelling like a wild man, and dove into the water with a whoop. He still had his boots on, engineer-style motorcycle boots. When he stood up, the slick bottoms found no purchase on the algae-covered ramp. His feet immediately went out from under him, and he was back underwater in no time. Everyone was laughing when he came up.
Don't know what you call that dive, but I'll give it a 3, I said, through my laughter.
I'll go 5 for creativity, Thad added.
Jeff was wiping water out of his eyes when his feet started to slide again. After several acrobatic bouts, he managed to get his balance enough to get out of the water and take his boots off, pouring the water out of them.
All right, tanks are full. We need to get back to it, Sarge shouted.
Danny cut off the pump to a chorus of jeers, and very reluctantly, everyone started out of the water. Jess made quite the show as she came out. I don't think she realized that she was looking the part of a wet t-shirt contestant. Jeff ogled her as she walked past him, and Mike caught the action too, though he was slightly more discreet about it.
Hey, Jess, he said, and pointed down to his chest.
Jess looked down and turned bright red, but then recovered.
You boys act like you've never seen them before.
Oh, we've seen them, just not those, Mike said with a grin.
Like Ron White said, once you've seen one, you want to see the rest, Jeff cackled.
Now that the show's over, can we get back to work? Sarge asked, drawing some snickers from a few of us.
Yeah, let's go. Nothing to see here, I said, as Jess moved toward the Suburban.
We were back in the ash, soot, and smoke all too quickly. While we were gone, a couple more spot fires had started. One was nearly an acre in size and took everyone's effort to knock it back. Every time we took one on, it was done in the same manner. On the downwind side, we'd start raking back the litter from the forest floor while attacking with the hoses and working the edges with the beaters and shovels. The method was very effective, and we were able to quickly gain control over all the small fires that appeared. After attacking one of these, we were taking a break in the middle of the easement. Sarge was looking back toward the main fire.
Looks like it's starting to burn itself out, he yelled.
I looked across the open patch. Black, smoldering stumps and snags jutted out of the ground, some with small flames flickering out of them.
It does.
I told Jeff to take a break and jumped on the four-wheeler and rode down the easement looking for any additional fires. The only thing I found was the smoking remains of the fires we'd already dealt with, thankfully. Riding back, I stayed on the north side of the easement, where the fire had originally approached from. The smoke was still heavy, heavier maybe than it was at the height of the fire. With the main blaze now burning itself out, it was no longer creating the updraft, drawing air in at ground level and pumping it along with smoke, ash, and embers out the top. As we headed back toward the trucks, I caught a bright flash.
That wasn't, I thought to myself.
Another flash came, then a large wet drop landed on my forehead. Another landed on my shoulder, then another.
I whooped and spread my arms out wide as the large drops began to come down hard and heavy.
The thunder rolled on for a long time, a crescendo signaling the end of our fight. Pulling back up to the group, I shut off the ATV and held my hands up.
Look at it!
Everyone stood in the rain, soaking it up as it quickly built in intensity
to monsoon proportions. Sarge was leaning on the hood of the Hummer, smiling.
"Think this will do it?" I asked.
Sarge squinted up into the sky.
"I don't think it's going to rain for 40 days and 40 nights, but I think it will certainly do it."
"I'll take it. I don't care how long it lasts," Thad said.
"I can't believe it! I can't believe it!" Danny shouted, looking into the sky.
Mike held his hands out as the rain puddled into them. He shook his head.
"Better late than never."
I looked up. "We're glad to see the rain now, but remember, hurricane season is right around the corner."
"Shut up and enjoy it, Morgan," Mike shot back.
I couldn't help but smile. The rain beat down what remained of the fire to the point that there wasn't a flame to be seen. We'd been saved. It was a small miracle. Finally, something had gone our way.
"Saddle up, boys. Let's make like a donkey's dick and hit the road," Sarge said. He always did have a way with words.
Pulling up to the gate, we saw Doc and Tyler standing in the rain. Doc held his hands out.
"Divine intervention?"
"I'll take it, no matter what it is," I said.
"Can you believe this rain? I can't remember the last time I saw rain like this," Tyler said.
"Just in the nickel dime," Mike said with a smile.
"I'm guessing this took care of it?" Doc asked.
"Yep, it did. But tomorrow, we're going to celebrate," Thad said.
"What are you planning?" Doc asked.
"We're going to roast a hog tomorrow."
That was met with a chorus of cheers. Doc smiled.
"Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about."
"Really? A pig roast?" Tyler asked.
"Hell yeah, it's about time," Danny said.
Doc looked at Tyler.
"And old Thad here sure knows his way around a pig."
Thad smiled.
"I can make one fit to eat."
I laughed.
"That's an understatement.
Are you guys good here for now?" Doc nodded.
"Yeah, we're good. I know you guys are probably tired."
"I'm beat," Thad said.
"Yeah, I've got a whole new respect for those guys who fight these wildfires," Danny added. "You guys head on home and get some rest," Doc said, waving us off.
"Thanks, man," I said, as Thad started to pull off. Thad pulled the little red truck into my yard, and I hopped out. I, for one, needed to change my clothes and relax for a bit.
"Catch up with you guys later," I said, as I headed for the house.
I found Mel inside, lying on the couch, a little bit beside her.
"The rain! Is it helping?" Mel asked.
"We don't need to worry about the fire anymore. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to change out of these filthy clothes and take a siesta," I replied.
After showering, I fell onto the bed, asleep in no time. Mel came in and woke me what seemed like a minute later. Sitting up, I felt groggy. However long I'd slept, it was either too long or not long enough. Rubbing my face, I asked,
"What's up?"
"Danny's here." I looked around.
"What time is it?"
"Almost 10 in the morning."
"What?
I slept all night?"
"Like you were dead."
"I feel like I am.
When did it stop raining?"
"Sometime late last night."
Getting up, I dressed and walked out to the living room.
"What's up, man?" I asked.
"Come over to the house real quick."
Still not entirely awake, I slipped on my Crocs and hung my pistol on my belt. As Danny and I walked toward his house, I asked,
"What's up?"
"You gotta see this," Danny said.
That piqued my interest.
"What is it?"
As we passed through the fence between the houses, he pointed.
"That."
Tyler was there, skinning a deer. Two others were hanging beside it, waiting their turn for the knife.
"Holy shit!" I shouted.
Tyler looked up.
"Hey, Morgan, check it out. Got three of them."
"I can see that. When did you do this?"
"This morning, early."
As we were talking, Thad walked up.
"Someone's been busy," he said.
"Yeah,
Old Tyler here bagged him, Danny said.
Well, let's get to work then, Thad said, as he drew his knife.
You still want to do that hog, too? I asked.
I'd like to. I'll do it a little different now, though, considering we have these deer. We can render all the fat down. It'll really help with this lean meat, Thad said.
We can freeze some of it, but the freezer's not big enough for all of this, Danny said.
Don't worry, we can smoke most of it, Thad said.
Dry some, too. We have salt and vinegar still. I'll make biltong, I said.
Sounds good to me, Thad said.
The smell of fresh hanging meat got the attention of the dogs. Their eyes tracked every movement and didn't miss a thing. Tyler had the hide off the first deer and was ready to open it up. He hadn't field dressed them, as the organs were valuable. Simply dumping them in the dirt was an unthinkable waste. We pulled out a large tub and set it under the suspended animal. Once opened up, most of the entrails fell out on their own. The heart and liver were removed and set to the side. When the offal landed in the tub, the dog sat up. The lungs had to be cut out and dropped into the tub. I took them and cut them into three pieces, tossing them to the dogs, who eagerly set upon the fresh meat. Thad and Danny were already working on the second deer. Its hide was quickly off, the tub was slid under it, and the process repeated. The dogs would certainly eat well today.
I want to keep the brains, Danny said.
Want to tan some hides? Thad asked.
Yeah, I'll freeze the brains until the hides are ready.
Cool. I've always wanted to do that, Tyler said. The skinned animals were cut up, the back straps, tenderloins, and front and rear quarters removed. We even cut the ribs off, leaving nothing more than a spine and head. Danny used a hacksaw to open up the skull, and the brains were removed. He cut the spines into pieces and tossed them to the dogs, much to their delight. I was skinning the third as the first two were finished. Tyler was helping me, and just as the first two, it didn't take long to have it reduced to pieces. Danny had a nice grinder and all the accessories to go with it. We'd hidden it in the garage down the road when we'd left. We piled the meat into the gray tubs and took it into the house, where we'd bone and grind it. Danny set a large poly cutting board out on the counter and immediately got to work. While he, Thad, and Tyler were cutting up the meat, removing the hams to use as roasts, and cubing everything else, I laid the back straps out. Using a fillet knife, I carefully cut the wide sinew from them, ensuring no meat was left on it. Once all three were removed, I took them back out to the shop. Finding a piece of plywood, I stretched them out, tacking them in place with small nails. With all three stretched out, I left it on the workbench to dry. While we didn't really need it, I wasn't about to waste it. There were simply too many uses for the stuff. With that done, I went back inside. Bobby was in the kitchen watching the work and making sure no one made too much of a mess in her kitchen.
Danny, you got any extra screen? I asked as I worked on a hindquarter.
A little.
What do you want to do?
I want to make a screen box of sorts to dry the meat in. We really want to keep flies off it as it dries.
I'm sure we can manage that. Let's get this all cut up and we'll check it out.
Are you just going to hang it up and let it dry? No other treatment? Tyler asked.
Pretty much.
What I'll do is sprinkle some vinegar on the meat and leave it in the fridge overnight. Then I'll salt it, and then we'll hang it up to dry.
It'll take a couple of weeks to dry to the point we can store it, I replied.
Tyler looked at me, obviously skeptical.
And that's safe to eat? You don't smoke it or anything?
Don't need to, man. I used to make it in the kitchen, hanging it up between two cabinets. Back then, I put some cumin on it for flavor. It turns out just like jerky.
I bet Mel loved that bunch of meat hanging from the ceiling in her kitchen, Thad said with a smile.
Yeah. First time she saw it,
She was like, "What the hell is that?"
Everyone laughed at my impression of a pissed-off Mel. "Brandy would probably strangle me in my sleep with it if I'd have tried," Tyler said, tossing a handful of cubes into a tub. Bobby looked into one of the bins.
"What's that?"
Danny looked over.
"Brains."
"What are you going to do with those?"
"Freeze them for now."
"Not in my freezer," Bobby shouted. "You know of another working one anywhere?" Danny said.
"Well, you better put them in something. I don't want to see them."
As we worked, other people started to drift in. First was Jess, Fred, and Eric.
"Oh, wow. Is that the pig?" Jess asked, looking at all the meat.
"No. Tyler shot 3 deer, Danny replied. "It was easy, too. They were moving away from the fire and ran out right in front of me," Tyler said.
"Looks good.
Are we having them for dinner?" Fred asked.
"Let's cook these backstraps and tenderloins tonight," Danny said.
"Why don't we just dust them in kudzu flour and fry them up?" I asked.
"That'd work. Let's do it," Danny said.
"As soon as you guys get out of here, we can get started on it," Bobby said.
"Now that most everyone is here, we can now officially say the fire is out. We don't have to leave," I said.
There was a round of claps and catcalls. It was a great moment, the threat over, the relief of the stress, and the sudden abundance. After everything that had happened recently, it was incredible for things to be making a turn for the better. I just hoped it would last. The house filled with talk, of the piles of meat on hand, of the fire's defeat, and of the rain. I sat back and took it all in. It was wonderful. A rumble in the yard, announced by the dogs barking, let us know Sarge had arrived. I walked out on the front porch and waved as he and the guys got out. As they came up on the porch, Sarge patted me on the shoulder.
"You get some rest, Morgan?"
I nodded.
"I did. You?"
Sarge stretched.
"Yeah, took a little nap. Feel better now."
"You guys are just in time. Come on in," I said, as I turned and headed back into the house.
"Damn, look at all that meat," Mike said, clapping his hands together.
"So stay out of the damn way. I'm hungry," Sarge barked.
"Then you guys need to clear out so we can start dinner. Jess, Fred, Mary, can you help?" Bobby said.
They quickly jumped at the request.
"You know it. What do you need us to do?" Fred asked.
"I've got this. Why don't you guys go chill out so I can cook?" Danny said.
"All right, chef,"
Bobby said, giving him a little salute.
"I knew I married this man for a reason."
Sarge tapped me on the shoulder.
"Morgan, why don't you and me give them boys at the barricade a break?"
"Sure thing." We made our way over to the Hummer and hopped in. Doc and Eric were leaning on the barricade, watching the sun drift toward the horizon. Hearing us coming, they turned around and leaned back.
"About time you got here," Doc said with a smile.
Sarge snorted.
"You're lucky I came at all. You boys seen anything?"
"Nah, there were a bunch of deer moving before, but they're gone now."
"There was all kinds of wildlife earlier. It was amazing," Eric said.
"That fire was pushing them," Sarge replied.
Doc looked at the old man like he was crazy.
"You think?"
Sarge smiled and walked toward the pile of logs. As he did, he flicked the back of his hand into Doc's crotch, finding the sweet spot, apparently. Doc folded up and went to his knees with a moan. Sarge smiled and looked at Eric, who was wide-eyed. When the old man's eyes fell on him, he naturally covered his jewels with his hands. It cracked me up, and I started to laugh my ass off. Sarge saw it and laughed as well. Doc, however, didn't see the humor.
"Damn it, that hurts," Doc said as he straightened up.
"Sorry about that, Ronnie. I slipped," Sarge said with a toothy grin.
"I bet you did. Just for that, I'm taking the truck. Your old ass can walk," Doc replied as he headed for the Hummer.
"Thanks for being down here, guys,"
I said.
Tyler and Doc waved.
No problem, Morgan, Doc said.
You might want to hurry up. They're cooking some venison, Sarge said.
No shit. Man, that's going to be good, Tyler said.
Yeah, I'll be thinking of you while I eat it, Doc said, giving Sarge the finger.
I started to laugh again when Sarge headed for the truck. Doc hurried to start it, backing up as soon as the engine caught, an obvious look of relief on his face as he did. Sarge laughed and waved, then returned to the barricade. The sun was now kissing the horizon, a very dull orange orb balanced on the hayfield across the road. With all the smoke still in the air, it darkened the sun so much it looked like a giant pumpkin.
How's the hip? I asked.
Sarge kicked his leg out.
Almost back to normal.
Nodding, I replied.
Good. We were worried about you.
Shoot. Don't need to worry about me. Take more than that little snot nose to kill me.
I smiled. If he were half as tough as he thought he was, he'd be twice what he really is.
Yeah, well, take it easy. We kind of like having you around.
With the sun almost gone, I looked down the road toward Altoona, and a pair of white eyes stared back at me.
Hey, I said, slapping Sarge's arm, pointing up the road.
Looks like we got visitors, he said.
Wonder who's got the stones to be on the road in the dark, I said.
We're about to see.
As the lights got closer, it became obvious there were two vehicles. I mentioned it to Sarge.
Nothing to worry about. They're Hummers.
How can you tell? I asked.
You don't think I've seen enough of them things to recognize it? Hell, I can smell the bastards.
In a few minutes, he was proven right as the two Hummers coasted up to the barricade. I was surprised to see Captain Sheffield and Livingston in the lead truck.
Wonder what they want, Sarge said in a sigh.
The second Hummer pulled up beside it. Ian was behind the wheel with Jamie up front. Sheffield and Livingston got out and walked up to Sarge.
What brings you fellers down here tonight? Sarge asked.
We need to talk, Sheffield replied. Sarge smiled.
I'm all ears.
Came across some of your handiwork, Livingston said. Sarge cocked his head to the side.
What work was that?
Three sets of busted hands, Sheffield replied.
Oh, them boys. Guessing they came to town?
Indeed they did, and when they described what happened to them, I knew who it was.
I am kind of memorable, Sarge replied, pausing to smile.
But did they tell you what led to it?
Surprisingly, they did, Livingston said. Then what's the problem?
Let's just get to what we're here for, Sheffield said. I want to position a few of our people here. Use this as an outpost of sorts. Sarge looked over at Jamie and Ian.
You mean these two?
Three, Perez said from the turret. Yes, these three and the four of you would be a decent squad to have out here.
Oh, we got more than a squad here, Sarge replied.
Damn straight, I added. That's up to you guys. You just have to keep yourselves in check. This isn't the Wild West. Sarge looked around.
If this isn't, what is?
The comment annoyed Sheffield. You know what I mean.
I do. But do you get my point? I don't know what you want done or how you want to do it. But if I'm going to be dealing with this shit, I'll do it my way.
Those three could have killed.
They were wrong, but they didn't deserve to die, yet. So I dealt with them. They'll recover.
That's the problem. You're the army, not the local civilian authority, and we need to fix that, Sheffield said, then reached into his blouse pocket and extended a closed fist to me. I stared back at him.
Put your hand out.
I stuck my hand out, and he dropped a gold badge into my palm. The word sheriff was stamped on it. I looked up at him.
What the hell is this?
Times have changed. We've met with the county sheriff.
The county is simply too big, and he has his hands full with Tavares and Leesburg. There's a sheriff for Eustace, and I was thinking about who would be a good fit for sheriff of the north end of Lake County. And that would be you, Morgan. Sarge erupted in laughter, and I stared at him, seemingly unable to speak.
I don't want to be the fucking sheriff. I've got my hands full here.
I'm sure you'll find someone who wants the job. I held the badge back out. That's exactly why you're getting it. You and your people have your shit together out here. I've heard you talking when you were down visiting the camp. You're smart. You think about problems, and you come up with creative solutions. You have no idea the condition most are in. You have vehicles, you know the area. And so now, you're the sheriff, Livingston said. Livingston pointed at Sarge. And you, he pointed at me, work for him. Oh, give me a break. He isn't going to listen to me. Not that I'd want him to. Why don't you make him sheriff? I said. Sarge started waving his hands in front of him. No, no, no. I'll listen to the high sheriff. I don't want to be no sheriff, he replied, laughing. Looking at Sarge, I replied, fuck you. It only made him laugh harder, snot coming out of his nose and tears running down his face. Linus, I need you to get in touch with your higher-ups. We need some help. Can you do that? I'm in contact with the people at MacDill, but I know you've got other contacts, Sheffield said. Sarge was getting himself under control. He nodded. I can do that. Can't promise anything, though. Looks like the fire's died down, Livingston said, looking north. We stopped it on this side. I think it's done over here, I replied. See, that's why you're the sheriff, Livingston said with a smile. I gave him the finger as a means of reply, which caused him to chuckle. Have you guys checked on the camp? Sheffield asked. No. We were beat when we wrapped it up, I replied. I think you should go check on them. Me? You go check on them, I shot back. Sheffield smiled. You're the sheriff. I glanced over at Ian and Jamie. She had her hands over her mouth, obviously trying to hide her laughter. Ian, however, didn't even attempt to hide his enjoyment of what was going on. I shook my head. This is bullshit. We don't have very much fuel left anyway. There isn't much we're going to be able to do. We'll get you fuel. I was being cut off at every turn. It was starting to look like I was stuck with this crap. So, what am I responsible for? I asked. From Highway 42 North to Highway 40, Sheffield said. Holy shit, that's a huge area. How in the hell am I supposed to do anything in an area that size? You'll need deputies, Livingston said, reaching into his cargo pocket. He produced a small cloth bag and tossed it to me. It clanged when I caught it. In the bag were a dozen or so silver stars with Lake County Sheriff Deputy stamped on them. I think you already know some candidates. I bounced the bag in my palm, the stars clinking together. Look, if I have to do this, I'm doing it my way. I pointed at Sarge. And if you don't like his way, you're damn sure not going to like my way. Sheffield crossed his arms over his chest. Morgan, you are now the face of law enforcement in this part of the county. We don't have judges and juries, and there is no jail you can lock someone up in. With that said, though, you've got to be prudent. Sheffield looked at Sarge. You can't kill everyone for everything. I shook my head. I damn sure didn't want to do this. There was more than enough for me to worry about here. My family came first, my friends second, and nothing was going to change that. But, with all that said, it would give me the ability to effect change where it needed to happen. All right, but I need some support, I finally said. Sheffield nodded. We're going to move a few more people down here. I'm pretty sure you have the room. Who are you sending? Sheffield nodded at Jamie and Ian. Those two, plus Perez.
Sarge snorted.
You ain't got anything that's house broke?
Jamie's head perked up.
Hey!
Sarge smiled.
Not you, Jamie. That damn sea-going bellhop over there.
Ian smiled and blew a kiss at Sarge. I think these three will be more than enough help for you, Livingston replied.
Have you boys eaten yet?
Sarge asked.
Yeah, I was going to invite you bastards to dinner, but now...
I trailed off.
We're all right, Linus, Sheffield said. Fresh venison, Sarge teased.
Livingston looked at Sheffield.
Come on now, let's not be inhospitable. They invited us, after all.
Sheffield smiled.
Well, since you put it that way.
He turned back to the Hummers. There were two additional guardsmen there.
You guys keep an eye on this here. We'll be back.
The two men nodded.
I'll make sure you boys get a plate, too. We got plenty of meat down there,
Sarge said to the two men as they took up positions behind the barricade. Both of them smiled broadly.
Hey, thanks, one of them said.
Come on, let's go get something to eat, I said, as I walked toward Ian and Jamie. Jamie was grinning from ear to ear.
Hi, Sheriff, she said, as she started to laugh.
I gave her the finger as I passed, cracking Ian up in the process. Sarge opened the door to get into the Hummer and was surprised to see Miss Kay sitting in the back.
Well, hi, Kay. Didn't know you were there, Sarge said.
Y'all didn't need me for anything, so I just stayed out of the way, Kay replied.
What are you doing down here?
I asked. Timidly, she replied.
Well, I was kind of hoping I could stay here.
It's just so crowded at the armory, and they don't need an old woman in their way.
Sarge scoffed. You ain't old.
Of course you can stay here, Kay. I know some folks who will be happy to see you, I replied. She smiled.
Thank you, Morgan.
Sheffield and Livingston followed us down to Danny's house. The house was already crowded with people, and we were adding 8 more to it.
We got enough to feed this crew, too?
I asked, as we came up on the porch.
We got plenty, Thad said, as he got up.
When Jess and Fred saw Kay, they rushed over to her.
Kay! It's so good to see you! What are you doing down here?
Moving in, Sarge replied, with a smile.
Really? You're going to stay here now? Fred asked.
If that's all right with everyone, Kay replied. I can cook, and I can clean.
Cook and clean? You sound like my kind of woman, Bobby said.
Of course it's okay for you to stay here. You're more than welcome,
Mel replied with a smile. We've all heard so much about you. After the events of the past few days, it was nice to sit down together. As Thad cooked up the venison, I sat in the kitchen, thinking about my new position. I really didn't want any more responsibility, more challenges. All I wanted was a routine, some semblance of normalcy. Thad was busy at the stove, and I took a seat at the bar.
Hey, let's roast the pig tomorrow instead.
I was thinking of going down to the lake, having a picnic of sorts, a celebration.
Thad smiled.
I think that's a fine idea.
Here, this is for you, he said, handing me a plate.
Thanks, I replied with a smile.
After dinner, Sheffield and Livingston got up.
Thanks for the great grub, guys. Really appreciate it, Sheffield said.
No worries. Let me get a plate for your guys, Thad said.
Thanks, Livingston said with a smile.
Who's supposed to be on duty tonight? I asked.
We are,
Thad said, as he finished the last plate.
You want to ride down there? Livingston asked.
No, we'll ride down in the four-wheelers, I replied.
Here's the plates for your guys, Thad said.
Ian, you and Jamie stay here tonight. You too, Miss Kay. We'll work things out tomorrow with where you're living, Bobby said. Mel asked me to walk her and the girls home before I went down to the barricade. I told Thad I'd be back shortly and helped Mel round up the girls. Little Bit was sitting with Sarge, talking his ear off.
Come on, little bit. Time to go, I called.
She jumped up and hugged Sarge.
Bye-bye, Mr. Sarge. See you later.
He tousled her hair.
Good night, sweetie.
We walked home, Mel and I holding hands. Taylor and Leanne were swinging Ashley by her hands, much to her delight. They set her down, and Taylor looked at me.
Dad, is the fire really out?
It is, kiddo. I don't think we'll have to worry about that anymore.
So we don't have to leave? Little Bit asked.
Nope, we're staying right here.
Thank God. I really didn't want to have to leave, Leanne said.
So are things going back to normal? Taylor asked. I thought about that for a moment.
Well, in a way, I squeezed Mel's hand. I have something I need to talk to you about later.
She looked at me, concerned.
What is it? What's wrong?
I smiled.
Nothing's wrong, baby. Just something that's come up, not a bad thing.
What is it?
I smiled. I'll tell you later. We got the girls home and into bed. I gave Mel a kiss and told her I'd be back later. I still want to know what's up.
Tomorrow.
Thad and I rode the ATVs down to the barricade. Sheffield and his people were still there.
We waited for you, Livingston said.
Thanks. Appreciate that, I replied.
Remember what I said, Morgan. You've got to be prudent, Sheffield said.
I know, I said with a dismissive wave.
Thad gave me a raised eyebrow look.
We'll see you later, Sheffield said.
Once they were headed down the road, Thad looked at me.
What was that about?
I reached into my pocket and pulled out the gold star, holding it in my palm. He looked at it with eyes the size of saucers.
They want me to be sheriff.
Thad stared at the badge for a minute.
Sheriff of what?
North Lake County, they say.
What's that even mean?
I guess it means we're going to be responsible for dealing with shit around here, I replied. Thad looked at me with raised eyebrows.
We're? Oh, yeah.
I pulled a bag out of the cargo pocket of my pants.
Here, I said, handing him a star.
Deputy. He took it and turned it over in his hand.
You really want to do this?
No, but I guess someone has to, and I'd rather it be us than someone else.
Got a point there. If you're in, I'm in.
Thanks, Thad. Thanks a lot, I replied with a smile.
We didn't talk much for the rest of the night. I passed the time thinking about what lay ahead, hoping that maybe for a while, just a little while, things would calm down.
We were relieved by Jeff and Danny sometime around midnight. I went home and quietly climbed into bed, trying not to wake Mel in the process. I drifted off to sleep in no time. In the morning, I got up early, leaving to go to Thad's before Mel and the girls were even awake. There was a lot of work to do to prepare for our pig roast. When I got to Thad's, he was setting up a large tub on a fire.
Morning, Thad, I hollered. You got a hog picked out?
I figured one would pick itself out, he said, leaning over the side of the pen. The pigs immediately took notice. Thad held his pistol in one hand, and with the other, he reached out. One of the hogs made a lunge, and Thad dropped it with a shot to the head. After gutting the hog, we scalded it in the tub and scraped the skin and hair from the hide, the first step in preparing a whole hog.
Help me load it in the truck. Then you can go get everyone together, Thad said.
He already had the big smoker hooked to the red truck. We dumped the water out of the tub and loaded the hog into it, setting it in the truck bed.
Who's going to the park with you? I asked.
All of them. They all want to go. At least they did yesterday when I talked to Fred, Eric, and Jess.
Good. You guys be safe. We'll be up later.
I left for home, finding Mel still asleep when I got there. Since it was quiet in the house, I sat on the couch and closed my eyes. I was jarred awake when Little Bit jumped on me.
Good morning, Daddy.
Hey, kiddo.
You sleep good?
I did. I wasn't scared of the fire anymore.
Good. Know what we're going to do today?
A smile spread across her face.
What?
We're going to the lake for a cookout.
Really? We are?
She jumped up and down, clapping her hands. In a little while. Let's go see if Danny is awake, I said, as I stood up.
Okay,
she replied, grabbing my hand. We walked over to Danny's in the cool morning. It was still overcast, and the ground was damp, a nice change in weather. We found Danny and Bobby sitting on the porch, enjoying the morning as well. Little Bit ran up the stairs and sat on Danny's lap. I dropped onto a step. We talked a little about the plan for the day, but mainly, we enjoyed the morning, soaking it in. With the fire out, we took the chance to relax and enjoy some downtime. In the afternoon, we organized who would stay at the barricade. I was surprised when Ian and Jamie volunteered for the whole day.
You guys could use a break, Ian said.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. We'll get you guys down there at some point, I said. We headed down to the park in the afternoon. Everyone was excited to go. Little Bit was bouncing up and down the whole ride there. When we rolled up, Thad had the big smoker set up near the old swimming area of the park. Fred and Eric were sitting at the water's edge, and Jess and Mary were sitting at a picnic table.
Holy crap, that smells good!
Jeff shouted, reaching for the smoker's lid. Thad smacked his hand.
It needs another 2 hours.
Well, since we have some time to kill, let's get everyone together real quick, I said. Everyone gathered, some with looks of concern on their faces.
What's this all about? Danny asked.
Mel crossed her arms.
Yeah, what is this about?
First, we've been under a lot of stress with the fire, but we beat it.
With little help from the rain, Jeff said.
A lot of help, Mike added.
Yeah, a lot of help. But we really came together and put on a good show. Thanks for all the effort, guys. Fred and Jess whooped and hollered, echoing my thanks.
Anything else? Mel asked.
Actually, yes. I pulled the star out again and held it up. It would appear that the army wants me to be a sheriff. We're going to be responsible for the north end of the county. I looked at Sarge, and he gave me a wink and a small nod.
What do you mean? Mel asked.
Just that. Someone needs to step up. And if there's going to be someone around here enforcing their vision of the law, I'd like it to be ours, I replied.
What do you mean, ours? Danny asked.
I pulled the bag out once again and removed a badge from it, tossing it to Danny. This is what I mean. I continued passing out badges, and when I got to Jess, I paused for a moment.
You up for it?
Really?
You want to give me one?
I looked around. We're all part of this. It's going to take all of us. Sarge stood up.
It is.
Everyone looked over at him.
What you guys are going to be doing is important, and we'll be here to support you.
Sarge nodded toward Mike, Doc, and Ted, plus a few others who were coming over to help out. But that's not what today is about. Let's enjoy this nice day.
And eat.
Don't forget the eating part, Mike said.
Amen, Jeff shouted. You chow hounds will get your feet on, cool your jets, Sarge added.
The pig will be ready in a bit, Thad said.
Mel came up beside me.
I want to talk about this.
We will, I promise. Sarge came over.
Miss Mel, can I borrow him for a minute?
She nodded.
Sure.
We've got to take a ride. We'll be back before the food's ready.
Where are you going? Mel asked.
Sarge grabbed my shoulder.
The sheriff here needs to go take a look at the camp.
Now? Mel asked.
We'll be back shortly. It won't take long, I replied, then gave her a kiss.
Mike, Teddy, let's go.
You too, Doc. We may need your services, Sarge said.
We drove through a scorched landscape. Blackened trunks and palmettos lined the road on either side. It was utter devastation. The sandbagged emplacements at the gate were nothing more than a pile of melted plastic and slumping sand. Pulling up to the camp proper, we took in the scene. Ted stopped the truck on a small rise, looking out across the camp. Where tents once stood, there remained only their scorched remnants. We could see a couple wretched souls picking through what remained behind.
Look at this place. It's gone, totally gone, Ted said.
There isn't shit left, Mike called down from the turret.
Take us through it, Teddy, Sarge said with a nod.
We rolled down into what remained, getting a closer look at the few people pawing through the scorched leavings from the fire. A man picking through a pile of ashes straightened when he saw the Hummer. Ted slowed as he pulled up.
Anyone hurt around here? Sarge asked.
He looked around.
I don't know. Most people ran off. What are you doing?
The man looked down and shrugged, clearly dazed.
Looking for something, anything. I should have left. I shouldn't have stayed here.
We tried to tell you, Sarge said, and then waved Ted on.
We rode through the rest of the camp. The only things that remained were the Connex buildings. Everything else was burned. Soot and ash was the only sign the camp had ever been there.
It's amazing to see it all burned, I said.
I imagine the buzzards are going to be eating good for the next few days.
I'm betting there's a lot of bodies out there, Doc said.
I was just going to say something about the smell.
It's not like the usual smell. I can't quite describe it, I said.
Smells like combat. Burned gear, equipment, bodies, Ted replied.
We drove back to the park in silence. I didn't know what should be done. Hell, what could be done for that matter? But for now, it didn't really matter. All that mattered was a whole hog sitting on a smoker and the people who I was going to enjoy it with. We got back just as Thad was starting to pull the pig apart. We all dug in, and I have to say, it was one of the best meals I had ever eaten. The fact that I was sharing it with these great people, people who had overcome such hardship right alongside me, without complaint, and without ever losing their sense of humor, made it even more memorable. I really did feel grateful for where I was, all things considered. The rest of the day was spent with my family and friends, eating sweet, tender pork and lounging by the lake. Little Bit and her sisters played in the water. The sun had burned off most of the cloud cover, but it hadn't gotten too hot. Mel and I sat with our feet in the water, watching the girls play. Looking back over my shoulder, I saw Jess and Mike sitting together, close together, at one of the tables. With full bellies, Doc and Ted were both sprawled out on a picnic table, snoozing. I smiled again. Such a stark difference from where we were just a few days ago. A squeal of laughter brought my attention back to my girls. They were wrapped up in a knot, Leanne and Little Bit trying to push Taylor over. Life was good.
I'm going back for seconds, I said, as I stood up.
Mel looked up.
Don't you mean thirds or fourths?
I smiled at her. Who's counting? After eating, I stripped off my shirt and jumped in the lake with Little Bit. It didn't take long for everyone to follow suit. With full bellies, we got into a rousing game of chicken. With Little Bit on my shoulders, Jess on Thad's, and Leanne on Taylor's, we splashed back and forth to the cheers of everyone on the bank. Tyler had Jace and Edie, one on either shoulder. Mike and Ted waded into the fray, and it quickly devolved into a splash fest, with children and adults alike laughing. Sarge lay sprawled on the bank with his boots off and his pants rolled up. Waist deep in the water, I waved at Mel, and she smiled and waved back. For now.
if only for a moment, I had my normal. This is Duke Fontaine. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Resurrecting Home by A. American. This program was directed by Tony Huds, executive producer Sarah Jaffe. Text copyright 2014 by Angry American. Production copyright 2014, Penguin Random House Audio, a member of Penguin Group, USA, LLC, a Penguin Random House company. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.